today is Halacha Day 4, Perek Lamed. Looking through the Perek, there wasn't very much to find. However, there is one pasuk that sticks out as being quoted possibly being quoted lehalacha, and for a very, very modern issue, and that is for the issue of who is determining motherhood, determining who is the mother of in a situation where there is a surrogate mother, right? So what's the case here? They take the sperm from a man, they mix it with the egg from a woman, they insert that embryo, so that forms an embryo together. You take that embryo, and rather than put it back into the mother, they put it, well, she's not able to host it for whatever reason, it's then put into a surrogate mother. So you find some other woman who is then going to carry the baby, and then ultimately give birth to the baby. Right, so we're not going to discuss this morning whether that is a good idea, a bad idea, a neutral idea. That's not for this morning. This morning we'll just discuss the simple question of, once this baby is born, mazel tov, who is the mother? Who does halacha consider the mother? Does halacha consider the genetic mother the mother, or does it consider the birth mother to be the mother? I guess that the surrogate slash birth mother to be the mother. Is it a bechor?
If the real mother had a baby before, but you're putting in a surrogate who never had a baby before,
The truth is, for the case of Pinyon HaBen, it could very much. Oh, hello. If you're asking about Yerusha, so again, Yerusha is going to go by the father. Correct. If you're asking about Pinyon HaBen, so there is a good reason to say that you would not do a Pinyon HaBen. In this case, because there is a Rabbeinu Chananel in the Seches Chagiga that says that just as it has to be a natural birth coming out, it also has to be a natural birth coming in. And if it's not a natural birth coming in, so that we will consider it lahalacha like a cesarean. So therefore, that child wouldn't have its bris on Shabbos. And shouldn't say that. Some suggest that then that child would not have its bris on Shabbos, and furthermore would not have a pinyon of ben. Now,
what does the bris have to do with cesarean?
A cesarean child will not have its bris on Shabbos. It's a suffix whether it's obligatory to have it on the eighth day or not. That could be the requirement to have it on day eight. Is tied to having a natural birth based on Pesukim in the beginning of Tazria, the beginning of Parshas Tazria. So if it's not, so it could be that you're obligated to do it on day one or day two, right? So in the case of a cesarean child, so that's a suffix, that's a question. So we will have it on day eight because maybe it's obligated to have it on day eight, but if having it on day eight would mean violating Malachus of Shabbos, so then it will not be on day eight. We'd push it off till day nine. That's the. So just as we would apply that to a cesarean for the way out, an unnatural birth on the way out, we would also supply it for an unnatural birth on the way in, possibly. That's a machlokas aposkim today, and there are many that have even changed their mind back and forth about that issue. So the question of whether there would be a pinyon of ben may or may not be moot. There's a further issue when it comes to pinyon of ben. That is by pinyon haben. What do you do in a suffix pinyon haben? So a suffix pinyon haben, you can very much say that you would paskin lekula. Why? Because leniently, right? Why would you paskin that way when it comes to a pinyon haben? Because a pinyon haben is in essence a monetary transaction, and in my monetary transaction, we have the rule saying hamotzi mechaveru alav haraya, that the one who's trying to get the money, they have to bring proof that this person is actually required to give us money. And if there is any suffix in that, so then the money will stay where it is. So in the case of pinyon haben, it could quite possibly stay where it is. Okay, but. Yeah, there's other very significant issues that will come about as to regarding who the child's mother is, starting with who are the child's brothers and who are the child's sisters and who are the child not allowed to marry, who are they permitted to marry. So all these are very relevant questions to try to figure out who is, and that's A, and then B, and this is a very practical question as well, and that is, well, very often the surrogate mother is not Jewish. So is the child considered Jewish? Are they not considered Jewish? And then once one goes ahead and does a conversion, so converts are not permitted to marry Kohanim. So there's a lot of significant things here. So I will just quote two. There's two sources that are, well, there's many, many sources. One could find articles, a lot of them have been written, trying to figure out this topic. We'll just quote two possible sources for this and point out that both of those sources can go either way. And one of those sources is based on a pasuk in this week's, in this morning's, in Perek Lamed, which is the Perek that we're up to. So in Perek Lamed, pasuk, where are we? Pasuk 21, pasuk Chaf Aleph. So, actually, pasuk Chaf Beis. Well, pasuk Chaf Aleph. One could see pasuk Yates. It says Vatar Od Vateled, that she became pregnant and then had a Leah. Leah became pregnant again, and she had a sixth child. Right, and with all of the children that were born to Leah, it always begins by saying Vatahar Leah, Vatahar Od Leah, Vatahar, that she became pregnant and then she had a child. However, if you go to Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, at the end of the discussion about Zevulun, at the end of her six boys being born, it says the following: Biachar Yalda Bas Batikra Shema Dina. And afterwards, she had a daughter, and the daughter's name was Dina. So, what is lacking from that description? The idea that she became pregnant. Right. So that pregnancy, the idea of her becoming pregnant, is not mentioned there. So the Tur al HaTorah, or the Pirush Tur al HaTorah notes, points out that there's no conception mentioned here. So why is it that there is no conception that is mentioned here? So he quotes a Medrash that Leah was originally pregnant with a boy, and Rachel was pregnant with a girl, and Leah felt bad for Rachel. Leah had already clinched the title. She had already had more boys than anyone else is going to have. And if she was going to have a seventh boy, so that not only would lead Rachel less than Leah, which was already clinched, but she would even have less than Bilhah and Zilpah. So that would have been a disgrace for Rachel. She would only have one boy. So Leah davened that her boy should go to Rachel, and Rachel will have an extra boy. And the idea that Rachel is pregnant with a girl, so that will then that girl will instead be born by Leah. And that's what the Torah quotes. The Torah quotes this medrash that you have a flip that the children. It sounds like what happened is that the two fetuses switched, right? That there was a fetus in Leah and a fetus in Rachel. They switched around with each other, and the Rachel fetus was now birthed by. Leah. So this medrash is not so pashut. However, it is quoted on the Targum Yonasan. If you use the Mikros Gedolos, on the page there is a Targum Yonasan. It is written in very thick and difficult Aramaic, but in that Targum Yonasan, it does make the comment that the child was switched from one to the other. Okay? So that switch took place. Now, it should just be noted that this story is quoted in Maseches Brachos in Daf Samach, but quoted with a very with a pretty big difference. That Gemara, the Gemara is commenting that you shouldn't daven for things that are impossible to happen, and the Gemara comments that you shouldn't daven that after a child is already 40 days old, you shouldn't daven that the child be a certain sex, because it's already been determined and there's nothing else to talk about. So the Gemara says, really, it's already been determined? Well, what about the story of Rachel and Leah? And it even comments at the end of that, and the Gemara comments that Leah saw that Rachel wasn't going to have a boy, and that her boy, that with her boy, she would mean that Rachel wouldn't have a boy, so she davened to Hashem, and the sexes switched. Not that they necessarily flipped. One fetus went to the other fetus, which is the way the Medrash is, this alleged Medrash is describing it, but just simply that the sex of the child changed to be the other sex. That there was a.
So we accept on this that this all happens post 40 days?
So the Gemara asks, how could that. So you see that it happens. The Gemara answers, well, we don't recall, we don't daven for miracles. That we don't expect miracles to happen.
So the Gemara accepts the fact that it happened after 40 days.
The Gemara, yeah.
Yeah.
It springs up another topical issue about this whole transgender thing.
Yes. Yes. So that Gemara, very good. So that Gemara is invoked for the transgender topic. If you'd like, Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg from Boca Raton has a shiur on the transgender issues where he talks about that Gemara. That he brings up the idea that there is the possibility that Torah does have a possibility of switching genders, and that Medrash is quoted as a proof for that. He talks about that. If you want, she was available on YU Torah, you go take a look there. I guess we could have done that for a halacha topic this morning also. But
one point I wanted to make, though, you had said that with Dina, it doesn't say that she conceived, but in Chaf Gimel, it says that Rachel conceived.
When it says
Chaf Gimel.
In Chaf Gimel, Vatar Vatelevina Tomer Asaf Elokim Escher Pasi. Right, what does the Torah do with that? Chaf Gimel, 23. Two verses later. Right, so the Torah say that's the proof. That seems to be the regular language. That's true. What can I say? The Torah says it.
It's all in time to be labeled.
Well, yeah, we're looking at this. We're looking at these pregnancies as happening in parallel. So,
right.
So that's what he's bringing up here.
Well, the language of the Torah actually is v'lo nemar b'harayon. It doesn't mention here the pregnancy. It says in the Medrash why she'ika harayon lo haya ela mirachel, because the conception was from Rachel, right? Ha'isa roy leholida ela shemispal la shelo yachelka bebanim pachos miharba shrachos mibetan rachel leah, that there was a. I hear you saying that. Why is the question not brought up with regards to Yosef? That's the question. Now, it's not necessarily.
This would allude.
I hear. It's a good question. It doesn't stop this from being quoted lahalacha, but it's a good question. Yeah.
But this would seem to allude to the fact that Leah didn't conceive, that she just.
No, she didn't conceive Dina. She conceived someone else. That's the implication. She conceived Yosef. And Yosef is then considered the son of Rachel. You're right. Now, it doesn't seem like there's any discussion regarding to Yosef, who's Yosef's mother, but there is a discussion regarding Dina, who is Dina's mother. Right? Where does it, this actually shows? So, okay, before we get to that, let's just throw this question out. Let's assume that that's correct. That actually happened, according to the Medrash, that there was a fetus within, an embryo within Leah, within Rachel, and it jumped to Leah. The Yosef issue notwithstanding, right? So what does that indicate? Does that indicate that we follow the genetic mother, or does it mean that we follow the host mother? Right? So very nice, it happened. But can we prove anything halacha from the fact that it happened? Right? So there is, so the Tur, the same Tur, points out, In Parshas Vayigash, there is a description there of the children that were born. So in Parshas Vayigash, Perek Memvav Pasuk Yud, you don't have to look it up, but it says over there, Uvenei Shimon, that the children of Shimon were Yimuel v'Yamin v'Ohad v'Yachin v'Tzochad. Those are the children of Shimon. The Shaul ben Haknanis, and Shaul the son of Kenanis. What does that mean? Who's Kananis and who's Shimon? What's going on there? So Rashi there jumps in and says, "Oh, you know who Ben Kananis is? Why he's called Ben Kananis? Ben Dina Shenivula LeKanani, because he's the son of Dina, who actually had relations with the Kanani. Right? Dina was raped, and she had relations with the Kanani. Now, okay, then why is this kid being called the son of Shimon then? So the Gemara says, Kishaharku es Shechem, when Shimon went around destroying Shechem, lo aisa Dina rotza latzes. Dina didn't want to leave, because Dina says, I'm damaged goods now. Who's going to want to marry me? So ashe nishbala Shimon shiisa'ena. Until Shimon promised her that he would marry her. So whether this kid, Shaul, is actually the son of Kanani, what?
I thought Yosef married Dina.
No, she married the daughter. Mm-hmm.
Yosef married the daughter.
Potiphar's wife.
Potiphar's wife is the daughter of Dina.
No, but they had their daughter.
Yeah.
Supposedly, it was...
Right, they had a daughter, okay. But what does that have to do with Dina?
Adopted Dina.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Daughter?
Huh? Okay. Woo! Doesn't matter. Rashi doesn't quote that. Rashi quotes this possibility that it's the child that Shimon actually ended up marrying Dina. So then the Torah asks the question, wait a second, how could Shimon marry Dina? Shimon and Dina are sisters. Our brothers and sisters. So how could they marry one another? So says the Tur, well, if we accept the premise that Dina is not actually the daughter of Leah, but rather is only the daughter of Rachel and just happened to be transferred by Dina, so then he's not actually sisters with Dina. He's only sisters through the father, but not sisters through the mother. But these are B'nai Noach we're talking about. They're not yet Jewish at the time, so therefore he's permitted to marry his sister through his father, but not his sister through his mother. So that's how Shimon was able to marry Dina. Because Dina was not actually a sister, because Dina's genetic material, Dina's genetic mother is Rachel rather than Leah. So what does that seem to indicate? That seems to be a proof on the genetics side. Most people quoted the other side, but that actually indicates it as being a proof that it followed the genetics rather than the actual mother. What?
This is the way they come up with halakha
l'pasuk. So there is a question which we don't have time to really get into today. I gave a share on this a couple of years ago, and that is, can you paskin from these types of things at all? So these agadas, can they be used as to paskin halakha from at all? So there is a range of opinions on what the import of agadas have on the piskei halakha, with the range being that. Well, they're not necessarily to be taken literally. So can you take things literally? So some say, okay, one second. Before we go there, this Haggadata is used as a proof the other way. Because Dina is always, notwithstanding this issue about Shimon marrying her, however that took place, she's listed as being the daughters of Dina, that she's constantly recognized within the Torah as being the daughter of Leah. So if she's always constantly recognized as being the daughter of Leah, what does that indicate? That indicates that we follow the birthing mother, the surrogate mother, rather than the genetic mother. So the Minchas Yitzchak here in Chelek Gimel Siman Kuf Yadalad, quotes both opinions and says so from here. We say that you can't bring a raya, you can't bring a proof from this story of Dina, because A, proofs can be brought from it either way, and then Rabbi Bleich in his article brings up the idea of, yeah, and we don't paskin from agadatas anyway, and even if you say we paskin from agadatas, we're definitely not going to paskin from that agadata, because it's just, what it even means in the first place, whether it actually is a literally mean, whether it actually has application to the issue of surrogacy, whether has application to the issue of transgenderhood, like what actually was taking place in that agartha, what in fact actually happened is very difficult to determine.
Isn't it even the so-called switch agartha?
Yeah. And by the way, the idea that there was a switch is not necessarily.
What? Who's to say that Dina just was conceived
by Leah and switched around.
No, that's
what I mean, and switched sex.
Right.
Who's to say? Nobody says. Alright, it's a question, right? And it's a question. If it's the same Torah Shabbat Peh, but now all of a sudden there's two divergent ways of seeing it, either that there actually was a transfer of embryo or that the embryo just switched over from male to female. Right, so that makes a big difference, l'alacha. Who says that both are correct? They both might just be.
But it's a given that there was some sort of switch.
It's a given that there's something weird in the pasuk that indicates something different happened. What? Right, but it doesn't say it because it doesn't say she conceived, so something happened. Right. Your question of wait a second, well, it says that Yosef was conceived, so that seems to promote the Gemara's version. Right? The Gemara's version is that Dina was originally going to be Dani, right? And Dani switched to being Dina, right? So then you don't have to worry about the issue with Yosef because the conception of Yosef just took place later on, and that was conceived naturally. It was just a matter of the count rather than a displacement from one to the other. Right? And therefore Dina switched from one to the other, but Yosef never switched from one to the other. Right? And so that's the Gemara's version, but there is this Medrash version which the Torah seems to quote and then use it as a way to resolve a problem that appears later on in Bereishis.
They had different.
That's the point.
Oh, good.
Okay. So we'll leave the Chumash for a little bit and I'll just show you another famous proof that's brought up about this, but also is then used as a proof in both directions. So there is a Gemara in Yevamos that we have a concept that when somebody is converted, so they lose they're considered ketan shenola dami, and then they're considered as if they don't have any children. Right? They don't have any relatives. All their relatives seem to right? They're considered as if they're born anew without any relatives. That's the halacha with geirus. What about if a mother converted while she was pregnant with twins? Right. So a mother converts. She has twins. And they were clearly part of her when while she converted. So those two boys, are they considered brothers to one another? So the Gemara paskins, yes. Those brothers are considered married. Now, what do you have in that case, if you think about it? What it sounds like is the genetic material is coming from a non-Jew, right? And the birthing mother is a Jew, okay? So what does that then indicate if these two boys are considered brothers to one another? That indicates that we follow the birthing mother. Good. That means that we follow the birthing mother, right? Because the two boys are related. How are they related? Because they were birthed by the same mother. Okay? So that's Gemara number one, size Ayin Amud Beis. Now we have Gemara number two, Ayin Ches Amud Aleph, that goes on to Ayin Ches Amud Beis. And has the following, and the discussion there is regarding a woman who converts. So what is the status of a fetus that is contained within her? Right? Does that child need to be converted again? What is its status with regards to tevila? So the Gemara says, well, we know that it doesn't have to go to the mikveh again. Okay, that's the premise. So that seems to indicate that we follow the birthing mother rather than the genetic mother also, right? The fact that it doesn't go to the mikveh again. But the Gemara says, no, that's not why he doesn't have to go to the mikveh again. He doesn't have to go to the mikveh again because we have a concept called uber lav yerechimo, that we have a concept that the child is not considered part of its mother. How does the mikveh work? The mikveh, right, it's surrounded by the mother. That's called the chatzitza. That's called the separation. So the child is being isn't even coming in contact with the water at all. So the Gemara answers, no, that's okay because even though it's a chatzitza, it's only a chatzitza on the level of derabanan, if even that. And because the child needs the mother surrounding it, right, it can be considered as if the child itself has gone to the mikveh. Okay? So the child has gone to the mikveh, despite the fact that the mother is surrounding it. So if that's our understanding about what's going on, and therefore the child doesn't have to go to the mikveh again. Why? Because the child already went to the mikveh. So now what does that indicate? Does it indicate birthing mother? Does it indicate genetic mother?
Birthing.
That indicates... What? In the case of genetic mother.
Why?
Because the child is not Jewish until the mother goes to the mikveh with the child in it. And the child is considered having gone to the mikveh not because the child is part of the mother, but because the child went to the mikveh. And the child did the act of conversion. So the child is then considered a convert.
Really?
Right, that child is considered a convert. So that means that we really follow the genetic mother, and this child is then going to be considered a convert. That's the way to understand Gemara B. So how does one? So you have this stira between these two Gemaras. Yes, Alan. What's the problem?
You're going to go, but I guess I didn't follow the
Gemara A. Gemara A is that the mother converts while she's pregnant. She has two boys. Yeah. Those two boys are considered brothers. Why are they considered brothers? So the answer is, well, it sounds very much like if you assume that we follow the birth, so the two children were born from a Jewish woman.
Yeah.
Okay, and therefore they're considered brothers.
They're considered Jewish brothers.
Yeah, which sounds like we follow the birth rather than the conception. However, you have this Gemara that's saying a child who whose mother converted while she was pregnant with that child. Mm-hmm. That child is considered a convert because the child goes to the mikveh. The child never touched the water. That's okay. It did. It was just in a protected bubble, which for the purpose of that child is okay. That's what the Gemara answers, which sounds like the child is a convert, meaning the child already exists from the time of the genetic material, which means we filed the genetic mother rather than the host mother. So how do we resolve this? So this little stira here is also used as a proof in both directions. So depending on how you answer that question, depending on how you resolve that apparent contradiction, is going to determine which way you go. So we'll give one answer. The Rav Schechter quotes in the name of Rav Salvechik, and that is, why is it that children are not related when they are born? Why is it that children or people are not considered related once they converted? What's the svara? What's the reason for that? So Rav Salvechik said, you know what the reason for that is? Is because when people convert, right, even when you have people converting on the same day, how does it work? One person goes to the mikvah, right, and it comes out, and then another person goes to the mikvah and comes out. What happens after the first person goes to the mikvah with regards to their brother? Right? Let's say two brothers convert on the same day. Right? One brother goes in, comes out, the next brother goes in, comes out. So for the interim period, right, you have one is right for a minute, 2 minutes, one is Jewish and one is not Jewish. Right. Says Rav Salvechik, it is impossible for a Jew and a non-Jew to be related. It's impossible that there be considered a karov, that a Jew and a non-Jew could actually be krovim to one another. So because they can't be krovim to one another, so therefore we can consider it as if they are katan shenola dami, like they're newborn, and therefore the relationship to their relatives all of a sudden gets erased. Okay? What? All of their relationships get erased because their relationship, either because their people that they're related to already became Jewish while they were not Jewish, or they became Jewish and all the relatives remained not Jewish. So it's impossible for such a relationship to exist. Therefore, the relationship is severed. Okay?
Theoretically, if they were men.
I don't want to go theoretically. I don't have time to go theoretically.
Fraternal twins, boy and a girl, could they marry?
So theoretically, because the Gemara explicitly said that they can't.
No.
Now, if they were both born as non-Jews, and then they converted while they were alive already,
right.
So technically we can. However, there is a concept in the Gemara that the Gemara in Yevamos comments that it's impossible, that Jews cannot be more makil than non-Jews. So if such a relationship is prohibited to non-Jews, they can't become Jewish and then create that relationship. But that's a din d'rabbanan. That's a rabbinic law. So technically, on love the rights that they could, and on love the rabbanan they can't.
We talked about this last week with Rabbi Gold and Tamar.
We don't have any time. So if one goes with that answer, right, Gold is here. If one goes with that answer, that really they could remain related, right? But there's just a technical reason why they're not. So what does that tell us? That tells us that we follow the birthing and that we follow genetics. Okay. Oh, sorry. I forgot the one last step here. The one last step then is, so in the scenario when brothers are converted while in utero, while in the mother, they are converted simultaneously. And perhaps in that case, the relationship never gets severed. Okay? There you go. Right, that's the final step. That's what Rav Schechter then adds in. Right? So if you assume that that's the svara,
but you're not allowed to do more than one at a time.
No, a mother is converting with twins inside of her.
Right?
So in that case, it's happening simultaneously. By definition, happening simultaneously. In which case, what? So that seems to go on the genetics side, right? That they are genetically...
Two people who were born already...
But that's not the case right now.
That's not that they can't. It's just that it's impossible. The Gemara assumes Eifshar Litzamsein, that we can't assume that they're happening at the same exact time. We don't assume simultaneouslessness, if such is the word.
Simultaneity.
We don't assume simultaneity in halacha. Right? So because we don't assume simultaneity in halacha, so we're always going to assume that there was a split second when one was Jewish and one was not Jewish, and therefore they're not related. But if they're only becoming Jewish via their mother, then it is happening at exactly the same time, in which case the relationship is able to be maintained. So what does that mean? That actually means that we're following the genetics, that they're born not Jewish, right? They become related, they become Jewish together, they become Gerim together, and because it's happening simultaneously, they don't sever their relationship. Right? And that's how you would resolve the two Gemaras. That's on the genetic side. That would be a proof that you would say that we're following genetics rather than following the birthing mother. However, one can actually say the opposite and say that the birth is the main determinant and the need for a ger, and the need for the gerus in utero is based on a technicality. That really we're following the birth. If that's the case, why does the Gemara have to come up and say, well, you have, really the child is converting while in the womb of the mother, and it's not considered a hefsek, right? Why is that conversion, why is that necessary at all to have that? He says, well, because there might be different aspects of things that are being done by terms of geirus. As a statement from Rav Naftali Trupp, who was the Rosh Yeshiva in Radin, the Chafetz Chaim's Yeshiva, so he suggests, he explains that with regards to that he might have a chiv to keep mitzvos via the fact that he was born from a Jewish mother. However, if he was conceived not that way, so he actually needs to go to the mikvah. Meaning, he himself is a convert because his mother is a convert, so he is converted along the way. But he needs to still go to the mikvah because otherwise he's going to be lacking kedushas Yisrael. That there is some aspect of this process that he is required to go to the mikvah. But yet he still is considered being born via the birthing mother and the birthing and at the point of birth. That and if we follow the birth rather than the conception, I will tell you, Lemaisa, Rashefter, I heard him talk about this once in Shir, he commented that he thinks the whole thing is a suffix and you can't bring a riot from any of these examples for all the reasons that we're talking about. It's just, no one's talking about it directly, and it's very hard, and that seems, I remember a couple of years ago seeing an article that the head of Machon Pua, who does, halacha and infertility, so he made a comment that he thinks that it's swinging, that originally it was most poskim held it was birthing mother, and it switched over to the conception was the main determinant, but Rav Shachter commented, I think Rav Yashav said that as well, that you have to follow the chumras in both directions. There's the stringencies in both directions. There's really no way of determining who is the actual mother, at least until Mashiach. Okay, Rabbi Gold is waiting, so we'll stop here.